Maybe. Who knows? Maybe I don't know what I'm talking about. We're going to bring on Professor Dr. John Lott. John, are you there?
Hi, how are you doing?
John, I'm doing well. How are you doing? And thanks for making yourself available on this.
Sure, happy to talk to you.
Now, John, I've known you since you wrote that first book, More Guns, Less Crime. And I got to tell you, and I know you're not an activist, you're not a gun rights person, but I got to tell you, that book is on a lot of shelves of a lot of people that are active in the firearms movement and like their Second Amendment and that. But you've written, is it 9 books now?
We'll have a 9th book coming out in August.
9 books. And so, anyways, I think we've got about 5 minutes, Nate. Nate was just talking to me on there about 5 minutes. So, John, what we've got is you talk about everything from the bias against guns, the media bias against guns, the gun rights, but also talk about some of the judges. We talk about the appointments to the different federal benches. Do you get into the Supreme Court appointments as well?
Yeah, I've done research on that.
All right. And now we're talking about, and I read an op-ed that you wrote, Mass Incarceration, Tell Hillary Clinton That Punishment Matters. And that was back, back last year sometime. And where you write, it's easy to forget that in 91, the U.S. murder rate was well over twice what it is today. And in a speech last week at Atlanta's Clark University, speaking from last year, Hillary Clinton showed that she doesn't understand her call for an, in quotes, end the era of mass incarceration. What that'll do is will endanger lives. So she now proposes to end this mass incarceration by keeping nonviolent drug offenders out of prison. What are your thoughts on that and what President Obama did today with commuting the sentences of 58 people, 58 felons?
Right. Well, they're a little bit different. I mean, Hillary was claiming that, I can't remember exactly, but I think she was claiming well over half the people that are in prison are there for drug offenses, and that's simply false. I mean, you look at data for the country as a whole, and you're talking about, for marijuana offenses, that's basically what she was saying, and you know, you're talking about a couple percent, basically, for something like marijuana. You know, it's her desire to go and dramatically cut prison terms and to cut the prison population by well over half and claim that it wouldn't have any effect on violent crime is just pretty silly. I think there's a huge amount of evidence, lots of academic studies that have shown that one of the major reasons that violent crime rates fallen since 1991 has been the increased use of in prison. Now, more police, higher arrest rates, higher conviction rates also matter, but I think if you add together all the different types of law enforcement, it probably explains about 50% or so of the drop in violent crime that we've seen there. If you make committing a crime more costly, riskier for criminals to go and commit, you're going to deter some of them from going and committing those crimes. And I don't know how you can go around it. And her notion that somehow you can just have this dramatic cut in the prison population and not have some feedback in terms of higher crime rates is just wrong. Now, given the fact that it is a much lower share of the prison population that are there for crimes like marijuana, you know, you can go on to look at something like Obama has done. It's not going to have a huge impact on the prison population, but I think there's arguments to be made for why you don't want to have people in prison for drug offenses. And look, we have a lot of violent crime that is drug gang related. In different ways, you have gangs fighting against each other to go and try to control drug turf, and you have valuable property there. And if they can go and you know, take away the turf from somebody else, they can go and make profits there. But it's a wide range of crimes. I mean, I'm not sure I agree with the numbers exactly, but the Obama administration back in 2009. Released a report saying that 80% of crime in the United States was gang-related, and that the vast majority of that was drug gang related. I mean, we're talking about crimes generally, not just somebody being convicted of selling drugs there. We're talking about murder, and other robbery and other types of violent crimes.
Well, you're right. In fact, I remember, and we've just got a quick segment I'd like to hold you over because this was such a short one, but I remember when they started cracking down on the Clinton administration in New York City, and they started cracking down on these drug crimes. Well, what else dropped? Carjackings, robberies, burglaries, also assaults. They also dropped by the same percentage that they were arresting and incarcerating these folks. So I agree with you. We're going to talk about that. When we come back, I'd like to talk to you about a potential either Trump or Clinton presidency and what it might mean to the court system, especially the Supreme Court, what we have to look forward to regarding civil rights. And I'd also like to get your opinion on what you mean when you say dumbing down the court system on these appointments when we come back. And this is the Rod Arquette Show. We are going to be right back. We're talking with Professor and Dr. John Lott, and we'll be right back. You're highly respected. Your ninth book is coming out. What's your ninth book called?
The War on Guns.
The War on Guns. How appropriate that that we're talking today. And you also founded, now correct me if I'm wrong, you founded and are the head of the CPRC, the Crime Prevention Research Center.
Is that right?
And so I look at your articles all the time. So what that is, for the folks that don't know about that, and you can get to it from crimeresearch.org, crimeresearch.org. It's exactly what its name says. It's a research organization. You specifically look at basically academic level research on guns, gun laws, ownership of guns, and how it affects public safety, how it affects the public in general. Is that right?
Right. I mean, we look at crime generally, everything from policing policies to gun control laws and the impact they have on crime rates. And, we're a group of academics, people who are different universities around the country, every place from Harvard to University of Chicago to the Wharton Business School and other places that have expertise in these areas. And, when claims come out, we know where the numbers are and we can evaluate them and we put together our own research.
I like that. Now, you take donations, I assume. You're a 501c3, is that right?
That's right.
You take donations.
Right.
Who do you take donations from? Smith & Wesson?
No, we don't take any donations from people who have kind of dogs in the fight on gun control type issues.
So nothing from the NRA.
No donations from the NRA. We're basically dependent upon donations from individuals or other interested parties, but not. None of those individuals. It's not that I don't think that they have valuable things to say, but it's just that we have to keep an objective distance on this type of stuff. If we, there's a reason why the NRA doesn't go and do research. I don't think people would, the media would take them seriously when they do the reports. Now, is there a double standard in the world? Yeah, sure. I mean, Bloomberg spends literally hundreds of millions of dollars on funding research. Lots of studies are done that he funds. And, the media doesn't mind the fact that he has a bias, has an agenda on this for the research that he funds. But, if somebody like the NRA were involved, I'm sure they would disqualify it and say it wasn't research that they should look at.
Well, the research, I'll tell you what I like about your research. If anybody cares, is that when you read your research, your papers, it's so heavily footnoted. It's, it's got the proof right there. You can say you don't make a statement unless it's backed up by something that everyone can go and look at and see the actual truth, not just subjectively
right.
Throwing stuff out there. So my question
is,
the
reason why I came to the views that I have on guns, I mean, I didn't approach this as somebody who is a gun rights activist or something. To me, the bottom line was safety. And I think when you look at the data, and I know my views have changed a lot over time on this, you find that police are extremely important. I think that they're the single most important factor for reducing crime. But the police themselves understand they virtually always arrive on the crime scene after the crime's occurred. And the question is, what do you advise people to do when they're having to face a criminal by themselves? And having a gun turns out to be the most effective way for people to defend themselves and their families. And basically, we find that there's two groups of people who benefit the most from owning guns. You have people who are relatively weaker physically, women and the elderly, where the presence of a gun represents a much bigger change in their ability to resist an attack from what's virtually always a male criminal doing the attack, a relatively young male doing the attack. And the second group of people are the ones who are most likely to be victims of violent crime, and that overwhelmingly tends to be poor, primarily minorities who live in high-crime urban areas. Again, it would be great if the police were able to be there all the time, but they're not. And if you're most likely to be a victim of a violent crime, those individuals benefit more than others from having the option to be able to protect themselves.
This is very interesting, and it rings true. So that ability that we have in many states to purchase a firearm, possess a firearm, even carry a firearm in most states, it really is impacted greatly by how the courts deal with this, and ultimately the Supreme Court. And we heard earlier on in the show that four, if not maybe five Supreme Court justices could be replaced by whoever the next president is. Now, are we so naive to think that judges are supposed to be above ideology, above politics? What do you think?
Well, if you go back 100 years ago or so, you would find that Democrats would appoint Republicans to important judgeships. Republicans would appoint Democrats. The last time, though, that happened where a Republican appointed a Democrat to the Supreme Court was back at Herbert Hoover, who appointed Benjamin Cardozo to the Supreme Court, a very active Democrat who had worked against him in the 1928 campaign. The thing is, though, back then, people believed that judges would look at the law and follow what the law was, just see what did it read. I don't think most people believe that that's the case these days, that unfortunately the judiciary has become kind of its own legislature, where policy preferences for judges seem to be given more weight on many important issues than what the law says or what the Constitution says. And because of that, in part, it really matters who's the president and who they're going to be appointing to these courts. So, I mean, on the gun issue, before the New York primary, you had Hillary Clinton going and telling a group of donors in New York City that she was going to do everything she could to appoint justices to the Supreme Court who would overturn the two big decisions on gun issues, the Heller and McDonald decisions, which struck down the gun bans that you had in Washington, D.C. and Chicago.
Ultimately, that was that very landmark case where it decided the Second Amendment was an individual right, not a collective right that so many people had been arguing before, but it was actually an individual right. We've just got about a minute left. Do you think that's likely that if Hillary Clinton is president and she appoints somebody, that they are likely to revisit that?
Well, I think it's extremely likely that they'll do it. You have the last time when the McDonald case came up, you had the four liberal members of the Supreme Court on record saying that they did not believe that there was an individual right to self-defense, let alone an individual right to self-defense with a gun, and that they did not feel bound by the earlier decisions on that, indicating quite clearly that if they had the chance, they would overrule it and remove it.
All right. Dr. Lott, I appreciate you. We've got a hard break coming up right here. CrimeResearch.org, CrimeResearch.org. Take a look at that website. It's fantastic. Lots of peer-reviewed articles on there, too, about everything you can imagine, and especially on firearms as well. Thank you very much for being our guest on the Rod Arquette Show today. Appreciate you.
Great talking to you. Thanks.
And we'll be right back on the Rod Arquette Show. And when we come back, we'll be taking your calls about anything we've talked about today. If you have a moose encounter, we can talk about that too. If you want to weigh in on what Dr. Lott said, give us a call, 888-570-8010. We'll be right back.
Hey, have you heard the news? The Market Street restaurants, they're located down.